Good morning.
Good morning.
And welcome. It is a beautiful day, isn't it? I mean, for October. Yeah, it's nice. So today, what I'd like to do is finish. You can never finish unless you're dead, and even then I understand you're not finished. I would like to continue with with the discussion on the Heart Sutra. And I'd also like to use some of the information that we used on Tuesday for the Engaged Buddhist class, which is quite dynamic and actually exciting. So I'd like to do that in relationship to looking at transformative practices. And what does that mean? So first of all, I'd like to pay homage. I'd like to pay homage to all the Buddhas, homage to the ancient ones, including the people that were on, the first peoples that were on the land before us. Homage to the teachers, past, present, and future teachers. Homage to families and friends. Thank you. Whose shoulders I stand on, we all stand on. It's important to remember. It's important to remember who supports us, whether they're present or not. So I'd like to start out with a story. about a year ago, not quite a year, it'll be a year in December, I did a street retreat in one of the larger cities here. And prior to doing the street retreat, I had made arrangements at a Zen center that I would keep all my, what I consider important stuff, iPhones, credit cards, money, that I would keep these important documents at a Zen center while I went out in the streets and was awakened to the experience of the generosity of being on the streets. So I had made arrangements. The street retreat was 3 nights, 4 days. Walked back to the Zen Center to pick up my things, knocked on the door, and a young person answers. And I explained to the young person who I am. I'm a Zen priest. I've just done a street retreat, so I might look a little intense. I tried to soften so as not to scare her. And she said, "Well, let me go check." She shuts the door. I'm like, "Just keep it mellow. Keep it mellow, dude. Now's not the time to freak." So another person comes, opens up the door, a different person opens up the door, says, "Can I help you?" I said, "Well, I hope so. I'm a Zen priest, my iPhone, my credit cards, my money. It's in the Zen Center waiting for me. And I'd like to come in. She says, let me check. She closes the door. I'm a little freaked out myself, right? Because all my stuff's in there. And really, I'm done with the street retreat by this time. I'm not going to lie. I'm done. So I'm like, just chill as much as you're able. Use the practice. So then the person who I met on Wednesday answers the door, and I'm like, oh, thank you, Buddha, Jesus, Mary. Oh, good. And she says, can I help you? I'm like, are you out of your mind? I just thought that. I'm like, yeah, I said, remember I met you. I met you on Wednesday, and we made these arrangements. She goes, tell me your name again. I'm like, I'm Laura Kennedy, Gentle Dragon. I'm a Zen priest. She goes, oh, okay, yeah. Okay, yeah, come on in. And all I could think of is, quite honestly, at that point, just getting the heck out of Dodge as quickly as possible. And also what comes to my mind's eye is the Bodhisattva vow to serve all beings. So when I say I believe this, I believe in this vow, I embody this vow, I really believe it. I really mean what I say. And when I say the Bodhisattva vow has no exceptions, no exceptions. I have direct experience, no exceptions. So if we experience fear in our expression of the Bodhisattva vow, that's okay. It's okay to have fear. And it's okay to say to your friends and teachers and others, I have a little fear about this Bodhisattva vow. I'm not used to serving all beings. In fact, I'm kind of used to serving beings that look like me. Is that okay? And if your teacher says, you know what, it's okay, we'll work with that. That, my friends, is a teacher. If they say to you, ooh, that makes me a little queasy, that's a flag. It's a process to serve all beings. You grow into it. It's a muscle that needs to be developed. Just like listening to the cries of the world. If you don't know how to swim and somebody's saying, help me, I'm drowning. You jump in and you drowned along with them. How is that helping? So it's a training. It's a discerning. Discerning, how can I help here? Coming from shunyata, which I will talk about. And coming from that depth, that vastness, that openness, one can serve all beings in a skillful way. And learn to serve all beings, even if they don't look like you. It's okay. The reason I did the street retreat, full transparency, I was scared. I was very, very scared. I thought to myself, living on the streets, There's other things that you could do right now. But that's your greatest fear. Well, that's true. Okay. I'll walk towards it. I'll compassionately, gently walk towards it. I wasn't violent. I wasn't like, I'm going to gut this out, right? No, I was not violent. I was not aggressive. I was very gentle. You're very scared. Yes, I am. It's okay. It is okay. I'm discerning right now. I'm discerning that it's very, very important. If I am to do what it is I want to do, I need to be able to walk towards my fears in a way with compassion and wisdom, so that when other people bring their fears to me or raise them, I can have compassion. I can say, you know what? We are interconnected. Because I get scared too. And we can walk together. Because that right now is what the world always needed and continues to need, is that kind of interconnectedness. Because we are, whether we believe it or not. And you know what? It's beautiful, isn't it? Beautiful to be interconnected, especially when you're suffering. So the Heart Sutra, that was a transformative practice that I did in the street retreat. It broke down many of my constructs of how I thought the world was. And when that happens, initially it's a little unsettling, but eventually you're free. I was free of my opinions. I was free of my views. I was free. And in that freedom, I felt the connection of life and the connection of all beings. And when you're there, imagine this. Birds are free to land on you because there's no one to land on. The self is gone. You're just wide open space, interconnected with all the conditions that are arising. It's quite beautiful. Heart Sutra is another transformative practice. Prajna Paramita Heart Sutra. I've been reading Kan's Ta-Nehisi's translation. He worked with Roshi Joan Halifax on this translation. It's quite beautiful. They translate it as Sutra on the Heart of Realizing Wisdom Beyond Wisdom. Wow. That's beautiful. Sutra on the Heart of Realizing Wisdom Beyond Wisdom. What is that? What is this wisdom beyond wisdom? And how do I practice that? How do I touch into wisdom beyond wisdom? Prajna. Prajna is a Sanskrit word. Transcendental wisdom. That's how it translates in English. Paramita is perfection. I in reading the Princeton Dictionary of Buddhism, I felt that it had a nice expression of prajnaparamita that I'd like to share. Prajna, understanding of reality that transcends ordinary comprehension. That's not... Thank you. It's not this understanding of reality that transcends ordinary comprehension. There is a foundation, there is a stability, a spiritual stability in developing that kind of understanding, that kind of wisdom. So it's not, it doesn't necessarily negate ordinary comprehension or the relative. The relative is very much part of transcending this reality. The relative and the absolute are intersecting and interacting with each other all the time. It's happening right here, right now. And it's very important to take care of the relative. It's important to eat when you're hungry. It's important to take care of when you're tired to be able to sleep. It's important. It's important to take care of yourself in the midst of activity. The paramita, the perfection, is going beyond. So it takes a little effort to practice the perfection of the six paramitas. Understanding of the nature of reality is likened to a sword that cuts through ignorance. So that's, once we develop stability in the relative, cultivating the understanding of the wisdom and using that wisdom to cut through appearances, to cut through names and form. So that if a person comes up to you and says, knocks on your door and says, I need a little help, could you help me out? You can discern, okay, I'm feeling a little fear, but I would like to help this person. And maybe I can calm my fear a little bit and extend myself to this person. I might not be able to give them what they need, and I might be able to find somebody who can, or I might be able to find the resources that they need. So just having kind of a flexible mind to cut through one's initial response of ignorance and fear. It goes on to talk about the three types of wisdom. One is the wisdom generated by learning, the practice of learning a new skill or a game, instrument. It's generated by that. It's practicing and working with what we want to be developing in ourselves, in our knowledge. The second is wisdom generated by an intellect understanding through listening to the teachings and reading texts. It's important. It's important to read the texts. It's important to hear the teachings. Simultaneously, the wisdom generated by reflection includes reflecting on one's insight. How are these teachings related to my life? How are these teachings related to my family, to my friends? How are they related to me? How are they related to the world that I'm interacting in? It's very important. Reflections on the insights from personal reflections on teachings and concentration. And this concentration is just the ability to be present. That's what we're talking about in the ordinary relative life, is the ability just to stay with the person in front of you, stay with the conditions that are arising. And then developing the wisdom generated through deeper states of concentration. This is the practice. This is why we do sesshin. This is why we do mindfulness mornings, is to develop, to create this groove so we can concentrate, we can stay present, so the mind can be absorbed, so that we can deeply listen. We can deeply listen to ourselves. What's actually going on with me right now? What is it? Or deeply listen to the person in front of us. What is this person saying? And just being present and open. That concentration is developed through meditation. It's the only way that I have found. You can be in what is called the zone or in the flow, and that can give you a taste or in a glimpse of the depth of samadhi, concentration. And yet, being in the zone is not it. I invite you, as much as you're able, sit with yourself. Dip into the silence and come from there in responding to the suffering of the cries of the world. Perfection of wisdom refers to wisdom whereby bodhisattvas achieve Buddhahood. Bodhisattvas, again, are beings like ourselves who aspire, who've maybe tasted some of the freedom, dipped into the silence, and want to bring that and offer that to all beings, that experience of liberation and freedom. And in the archetype of a bodhisattva, even though they're free and liberated, they come back life after life after life. They don't go into Buddhahood. They don't become a Buddha. Because they have great compassion. They have great compassion. Avalokiteshvara has great compassion for beings who suffer. And she or he wants to help them. So these transformative practices of the six perfections, the six paramitas, generosity. When I was on the street retreat, the last night we had plenty of food because we had been there in December, and December is a very generous time for people. They offer you all kinds of gifts. It was quite beautiful on one side. And so we had a lot of food. We had apples, sandwiches, and Genro, who is, if you ever meet, he's a ZPO, Zen Peacemaker Order person, and he's got a heart as big as the universe, and he was leading the street retreat. And I said, Genro, we don't need to go out and beg. We have plenty of food. He said, GD, we need to give people an opportunity to practice generosity. It would not be nice. I'm like, wow, okay, I'll go out. I'll do it. So generosity is the first paramita. It's really important to be able to learn, go beyond oneself and be generous. Morality, ethics. Ethics are very important to be in alignment with the practice. Patience. Patience is very, very important. Waiting, the ability to wait with dignity. That's a great practice. Effort. This practice does take effort. It does take energy on a daily basis. Concentration, developing one's ability to stay focused, to stay present, and yet be open. So it's not a hard concentration. It's open, wide, and wisdom. Wisdom is beyond knowledge. It's not mere intellectual investigation. It's the actual practice of applying and discerning what does this particular situation need at this time. I want to talk a little bit about, before I go there, I need to talk about shunyata. Shunyata is, it's not nihilism. It's not that life lacks purpose or meaning. It's not nothing. It's not nothingness. It's the absence of an independent existence. It's a thinning of the self. And in this thinning of the self, one experiences deep interconnection with all beings and all things. There's a selflessness and there's a oneness. There's a oneness that is not like a giddy, wow, this is cool, I'm one with all beings. It's not that. The quality of this oneness is a spiritual stability and an openness through the practice of meditation, of zazen. And in this connection, there's a feeling of liberation from suffering, because there's no self. There's no self that's clinging or grasping or attaching. One is open and connected. And when one is connected, it's very freeing. So in this, what I'd like to do is, how does the Heart Sutra translate and connect with engaged Buddhism? And I feel that it's intimately connected to engaged Buddhism. And that's the practice of moving. Does it go up? If it doesn't, it's okay. Oh, thank you. So can everybody see? Thank you, Leonard. That's great. It's the practice of taking zazen, taking that, dipping into the silence, feeling that emptiness, that spaciousness, and taking that out where we live and bringing it to all beings. And engaged Buddhism has roots. It actually was authored by Thich Nhat Hanh and was born out of the action of the 60s, where people, clergy, were setting themselves on fire, immolating themselves, as a way to bring attention to the suffering of the world. I'm not saying that we have to be that drastic. I don't think we do. I think that there are ways that we can work with the current conditions that are arising, the current conditions of racism, discrimination, and the disrespect and unsustainability that's being brought to the earth herself. I think we can do this. as people of the way. I think there are many models out there that can help us. I think Bernie Glassman Roshi is one model who I have direct experience with that has worked for me. Plunging into the place, plunging into the streets. And I did not plunge alone. I plunged with people who had experience, who also practiced meditation. And practicing with the three tenets, bearing witness, the first tenet, the don't know mind, being open, relaxing into your fears. And if it's too big, don't go there. I mean, there are many ways that we can support each other and support the actions that are occurring right now. Direct involvement is one. There are many others. So really explore what in my don't know mind, given the current conditions, the current suffering that I see in front of me, what is the best way? So bearing witness to that suffering or to those conditions as much as one is able. And then from that, what loving action arises? Well, maybe I don't go to Standing Rock. And I do send blankets. Or I do send gift cards. Or I write a letter to my congressperson. Or I talk to people. So there are many ways to participate in these actions and activities. To go beyond just the zendo and bringing this practice into the community. That is right now the dynamic challenge that is before us. And there are people that have done it. So we're not breaking new ground here. So from Thay is it means teacher. From Thay's teaching, he developed the interbeing order. And from the interbeing order, there were 14 guidelines that were developed, much like the precepts that we chant here at Clouds and Water Zen Center. So I just briefly want to go through these. And we went through these on Tuesday for our engaged Buddhist class. So I apologize for people who had been to the class. And I think that it's important that the whole Sangha be engaged in what's going on in this community. That's why I feel it's important to bring it forward. So the first is non-attachment to the teachings so that one doesn't become fanatical and think that this is the only way. The fanaticism is an act of violence. So having a middle way. Non-attachment to view. This is all a process. And we all know what happens when one becomes attached to view. It can lead to killing. And does lead to killing. Listening deeply. Interconnection is intimate, and to really experience that and develop that in understanding, not just a conceptual understanding, oh yeah, we're all one, but really a deep gut feeling, yeah, we are all one. And what goes on with my next door neighbor, or what goes on with my people that I work with, it affects me because I'm connected to them. Taking care of anger. It's really, I don't know how it is for you, but that's a practice that is ongoing for me. And not getting stuck there, but really taking care of anger and bringing it down, cooling it off, so that one can see more clearly what's actually needed here. The practice of compassion and listening and kind speech. So when we're interacting with each other, just listening in a compassionate way with an open heart and using kind speech, using kind words, using words that are that don't cut or kill a person. Voicing, speaking out about injustices and having courage. This is really developing an understanding and insight into one's fear and really cooling those fears and moving beyond the bystander. I think it's really important that we discern for ourselves and for as a community, what does it mean to speak out about the injustices that are happening, the racism that's happening, the discrimination and the disrespect that's being done to the earth? How do we do that? So the Sangha is a voice, and it's not a partisan tool that we use for political means. Right livelihood, the work that we do, how does that contribute to the community that we live in, the world that we live in? Cultivating nonviolence and compassion, practicing generosity, and keeping children safe from harm. I think whether we're parents or not parents, I think we have a responsibility to children to provide as much as we're able a safe world for children to play in. So that children, I always, as a social worker, I said to kids, you have two responsibilities. One is to play. The second is to go to school if you're school age. That's it. That's all you need to worry about. The rest is on us as adults. So I wanted to share that with you. I think it's important to realize that engaged Buddhism just didn't happen. It's been happening for a long time. And we have opportunities right in front of us to be able to participate in actions and activities. For instance, in the class, the engaged class on Tuesday nights, we'll be having Native speakers come in and talk with us about the genocide that's happened here in the state, in the country. And the direct experience and the results of that genocide, not in a way that is creating collective guilt. In a way, it's a history. It's happened here, and it's something that we who are living in this state, living on this land, it's something we need to be aware of. We need to be aware of the history here so we have knowledge. And we have insight, and we can contribute to the memory, to remembering what happened here, and how can we facilitate a process so those atrocities don't occur again. So it's I invite you, if you have the time, come join us and listen and hear what people have to say. This class is an opportunity to really see how engaged Buddhism looks like in this Sangha, in this community, in this state at a local level. What does it look like? And how can, if you're inclined to be involved, how can you become more involved, engaged in what's going on? And I don't have a clock. Sorry.
So it's 10:20.
Okay.
Kids come in.
They're waiting at the door? Oh, man. Jeez. Okay. Five minutes. Okay. I just need to breathe here a minute. I have more material than time. Before I close, I want to talk about the mantra. The mantra of the Heart Sutra. In the Heart Sutra, the last two sentences are the mantra. Gate gate par gate parsam gate bodhisvaha. That is the most important part of the Heart Sutra. Gate gate gate, go go. Okay? Meditate, meditate, meditate. Paragate, go beyond. Keep meditating. Go beyond shunyata. Go beyond emptiness. Parasamgate, go thoroughly beyond. Go right on through shunyata, through into liberation. So I invite you, for those of you that are chanting the Heart Sutra, when you get to gate gate para gate pasam gate bodhisvaha, keep going and don't stop. Thank you.